This is a HeadGum Original.
Welcome back to another episode of Punch Up the Jam, where every week we take a great song and make it even greater. But is this the first time in the history of the podcast that we'll be talking about art too?
Let's punch it. Punch up the jam, punch it
up. I didn't know where that was going.
That's right. We're back. And this week we're talking Bjork, which means we're not just talking about music. Whatever she does is art. I'm one of your hosts, Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Evan Gregory.
And we're here this week with Nagin Farsad. Nagin, thanks so much for being here.
Oh my God, thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
This is incredibly exciting, not just because we're making a new friend because you're here, but also because when you suggested tackling a Bjork song, it was really intimidating, and that makes it exciting in the same way that your therapist might say, like, you know that thing you don't want to talk about? That's really what you have to talk about. Yeah.
My therapist told me that I might do my best work when I'm being charged at by a wolf who's already been wounded and he's jumping straight towards my throat. And maybe I can rip the wolf's throat out before he kills me. And that's how I feel like talking a Bjork song is about.
What?
your therapist is The Revenant, the movie.
Yeah, we do the therapy in the woods. And just not the real woods, but in Prospect Park. As close to the woods as we can get.
Yes. And Nagin, thank you for being here. I'm very excited to have Nagin on the pod, not just because you already know her as panelist and occasional host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but also because you're the host of the podcast, Fake the Nation. I bet people listening to this may already know that. If you don't, go subscribe right now. This is a superb podcast by which comedians and insightful people of culture discuss and assess our nation and the state it's in. Am I summing this up right?
I think that was beautiful. Thank you.
You're free to use that as your new log line. I'll remind everybody at the end of the show to go subscribe immediately, but I couldn't endorse it more strongly.
Here is where I reveal that we really just got you in here to ask you a gotcha question, which is, do you think Peter Sagal gives too many hints to contestants? Think he's a little too easy on them? When they just say the wrong answer right out, he's always, you know,
an element of Hunger Games in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
In the public radio universe, you
want it to be more competitive.
It just feels a little bit more like Wait, Wait, Do Tell Me.
Ouch! No one's ever said that. No one's ever said that.
Yeah, I guess I want it to be a little bit more right and wrong Jeopardy.
Right.
But I guess you need the character. It's a show about character, and you see the narrative arc of someone.
Some might even say, in that there is no prize to winning the game, that it's the point of the show isn't the game at all. Some might even go as far as to say that.
It's also the plot of the movie The Game. Starring Michael Douglas.
Yeah, it's really about love and family.
Yeah, finding yourself, sure. Yeah, finding Sean Penn. I want to do a little just like meta talk about this podcast, which is to say, like, no Bjork song has ever been on this show before. No Bjork song has ever been assessed, much less punched.
Probably because in all previous episodes, when Bjork songs were looked at, people, they were about to do it, and then they were like, no, 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 wait, 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 wait. That's not a song. That's art.
Art, yeah.
This podcast is about music.
Right.
She's so out there and also so good. She's art, right? What about Bjork isn't art? It's just all of it, right?
She's art. She is Iceland at the same time. She's like an entire country and a person. She's also like all bird sounds. You know what I mean?
She's just so many things.
And I think that's why it's like, but I do want to say, I believe this to be a jam, the song that I suggested.
Great. No, I'm glad that you have brought this song to us as an unabashed fan. We like to take all comers. Sometimes people bring a song that they have a bone to pick with. Sometimes people bring a song that is their anthem. I'm glad you're taking that position.
And I'll say that Nagin, in a very sportsmanlike fashion, chose the song but said, hey, if this is too weird, if you want me to do a hit from the 90s, we can switch it up. But I loved the song. I never heard it before. And we got to do some outliers. We can't just do songs we know and love. We can't just do hits. And I feel like this is a fair outlier on the graph of songs we're doing.
I'm so happy that my presence is just expanding. It's just moving the Overton window for you guys.
Yeah. Who knows what we're going to do next? Yeah. We might not even keep doing music.
Yeah. I think because we're not talking about political topics, instead we're talking about musical ones, I'm ready to rename it the Bjorkerton window.
Can I also just point out that I hate it when people say Overton window, and I can't believe I just said it
podcast. Overton window is really moving on whether or not you should say Overton window.
It's just like, I think I'm sorry. It's not like I lost myself for a second there.
But
if we call it the Bjorkerton window, then I feel like we're okay.
We put it in the world of this show. See, on your show, people are probably saying Overton at you
too
all
many
the time.
Where it's
on this
too
show,
many times.
People are saying it's a jam or whatever it is.
Right,
so if you can bring in some new vocab, I thank you.
Okay, as someone who says Overton window perhaps too often, what is your, and someone who loves saying Overton window, admittedly, what is your complaint with people who say Overton window?
Well, first of all,
I'm putting myself on blast here.
There's like half of America knows exactly what it is, and so they feel like they're part of the club when you use the term. And then the other half of America is like, that's like an annoying, alienating term. Like, what are you just trying to say? You know what I mean? Like, do you have to use a term?
This is too esoteric.
It's too esoteric. It's just not. It feels like you're trying to exclude people from the conversation
which we have now done to our own audience. So I'll happily define the term without wikiing it. Overton window means, what are you allowed to talk about in the political sphere? And if somebody makes an outlandish claim, that's outside the window, but it might have moved the window
so that next year,
it's actually okay to talk about that horrible or radical suggestion. And what we're doing today is moving the Bjorkerton window on Punch Up the Jam. Now, it's now okay to talk about making bird calls in your art.
Her 2004 album, I listened to a ton.
Okay.
Nagin, but what was it about this song that called to you when
why are we here
when we called you?
Okay, so this is a breakup song. Like, this is one of those songs you break up with a person and you know, you go through like a grief or whatever, and then you go through that phase where you're like, you know what, I'm like so much better than you, and you're like, garbage, oh my god, I'm just realizing that you're garbage and you're so dumb, you don't even know that I was the best thing in your life. And you know, in 5 years, her lyrics, by the way, again, it's called 5 years, the song. Like, it's about like how in 5 years, if you even live that long, which is so dark, because she's maybe suggesting that her ex-boyfriend is gonna die. But you know, you'll wake up and realize that I was the best. And that's kind of how I felt about many breakups.
You've just summed up breakup songs so cleanly. You've already made a forceful case for the song, because honestly, I've heard the song before, but maybe wasn't so tuned in to it. And because of the sound of it and my preconceived notions about Bjork, I could not have told you that it was even about a relationship, much less a breakup. I thought it was maybe about like waves crashing upon rocks.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Bjork, like, this could truly be a song about a volcano, and I have no idea. You know what I mean? But to me, this is just a classic breakup song that should be a go-to for everyone who's experiencing a breakup. Like, this should be the number one song that happens for everybody.
Yeah, Bjork is kind of infamous for songs that are lyrically so out that it's like, well, it could be about this, it could be about that. But I agree with you, Nagin, that reading the lyrics to the song, it's pretty conclusive what it's about.
Well, yeah, when you see them down on paper.
Fair.
Now, when they go in your ear, something else. let me start playing some clips of the song so that we can get the listeners into the same musical space that we're at. And then I maybe want to hear more about your background personally with this. Here's how the song starts. This is 5 Years by Bjork. I got to pause it because nothing we have heard so far is anything other than like The Legend of Zelda. That was 100% 8-bit sounds from 1987. But even the percussion was like, sounded like Ganon just hit you.
And Evan is particularly qualified to discuss this because right now I happen to know that his 5-year-old child is blazing through the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, that's true. So I have Zelda on the brain, but I think my comment is true for any 8-bit game. I just thought of when we were trying to make a video that was around like 8-bit graphics. So I'll just play a couple, and then you guys be the judge of whether or not this Bjork intro sounds like this.
That is kind of her bass drum.
Or this. Yeah. These are just...
That also sounds like the sound bed for the movie Dune.
Yes. Yes, exactly. They probably got it from the same place.
Yeah.
This is a sound called Firework 1, which I just generated from a random 8-bit sound generator. How about this one? That's not in the Bjork song, but it should be.
That's now, clown version of Bjork.
One thing I will say in a very, like, we used to have to walk uphill both ways to school kind of way, is that this album did come out in 97. So I do think that it's hard to listen to it now with the shock and awe that it would have inspired in 1997. I don't know when you got so hype for the song Nagin, but like all these sounds, like now I feel like you just like keep scrolling through your sound bank. Mm-hmm. Until you got to like 80 sounds. But like, how did she produced this record with a couple other producers, including one of the guys from LFO. Like, how did they get these sounds? Like, were they miking up video games? Like, I just feel like there's a lot of production craft going into this that would not have to happen in 2021.
Okay, so I discovered Bjork when I was like 14 or something. Like, she's like one of the earliest people that I became a fan of, which is probably why I, you know, love her so much, because you love things at that age way more, you know, than
you'll
you
never
as an adult.
Love anything as much as the music you find as a teenager.
Yes, exactly. And I still sort of think if you play this song against anything that's coming out now, it still feels like a crazy, cool innovation. I don't know. I mean, you guys know way more about music than I do, but it just, there's something about it that feels sort of like timelessly cool in a way that I think people look at, like, I don't know, David Bowie or something. Like, it's just like, it's like her music is just an alien made it. So you don't assess a time to it. I guess it's 90s. I mean, it is 90s, but it doesn't.
This is definitely the teenager in you talking.
Okay.
But you're not wrong. We can acknowledge that Bjork is most likely an alien. And so the art that she produces stands outside a human timeline. And
right, that's exactly.
You're right that if this came out now, it would still stand out from the pack. And I didn't mean to critique Bjork's uniqueness.
I felt so offended. Could you tell? Yeah, I was like defending her so hard.
Sure.
The mix of these sounds, and we'll get to them later, and the strings that come in later.
I was about to fight you.
In
okay,
this room,
I'm
you're
so
clearly
sorry.
Bjork's avatar and advocate. We
you,
get that.
You would have already fought me if this is a visual medium instead of an audio medium. I think what I was speaking to is mostly just like the availability of these sounds.
Right,
the
right.
juxtaposition of her voice and these sounds and the strings we're going to get into later, it would be unique and whatever age, Nagin, trust me, it's very unique. But I just mean, like, I think in 1997, like, how do you get these sounds? I don't know. I think it'd be hard, where now a lot of these these would be very
or
readily
available. Or just available, right.
Yeah, I just pull up the preset, dog.
But I also remember seeing a video of her just, like, walking around Iceland with a recorder and, like, taking dropping, like, a quarter on a rock and, like, getting that sound.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Ah,
like, she is just, like, does that kind of thing.
Yes, and that is, by the way, 100% what they did for Dune. Just walking around a barren landscape with a microphone.
And before we move on, Nagin, I will ask you in a very 1810s dual kind of way, do you feel like you have satisfaction?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
We can move
yes,
on.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Now we can finally get to the lyric. Can I play verse one for you guys?
Real quick, Evan. I'm going to interrupt you.
So the answer is no, I cannot
for
play.
For your least favorite segment. Okay, Evan and Nagin, one of you has the chance to earn $5.
Okay.
And I'm going to emphasize, there are no hints, Nagin.
All right.
No hints. This ain't wait, don't tell me. If either of you can answer this question
right.
You
guys really have it out for that one show.
I'll Venmo you $5.
Okay.
If you can tell me, so Bjork produces herself. She did it in Spain because someone tried to murder her in England. I don't know if you guys knew that. So she fled to Spain after the murder attempt.
Okay.
And was trying to produce this album with what legendary American group?
This album?
This album. It did not happen because their schedule got too busy.
This is Bjork's third album. This is not even a part of history.
This is Bjork's third album.
This is like a failed scheduling conflict couldn't happen. Who is that?
This
production?
Trivia is deep, man. This is why I hate this segment. Because I love trivia, and I'm competitive, and I always lose.
They were making their second album.
You want me to make a wild guess?
I have a wild guess based on just being in the same sonic realm and dark emotional place. My guess is Radiohead.
That's incorrect.
Wait,
you said it's an American group?
I did say it's an American group.
Oh, no. I would say, I don't even know if this guy's American. Is it that Brian Eno posse of people?
It's the Wu-Tang Clan.
Shut your face.
Imagine.
What?
Imagine if this album had been produced by the Wu-Tang Clan.
But see, it makes kind of sense.
It makes kind of sense.
Oh, that's brilliant. I want it to happen now.
Yeah. Apparently they had a recording session after this and it never came out. So it must not have been good.
But somewhere those basement tapes exist.
They exist.
It's either not good or Peter Jackson's making an 8-hour television show about it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, that will happen in a world in which everything is content. Whether or not Peter Jackson is doing it now, like eventually the 8-hour Netflix special is coming out about that
one-hour session with Wu-Tang Clan.
Wu-Tang Clan and Bjork.
I'm like 1 for 10 on this.
Evan has won $5 so far.
I haven't won any, so. You think you deny me of something? Well, I've got plenty. You're the one who's missing out, but you won't notice. Till after 5 years, if you live that long, you'll wake up all loveless.
Okay, I just want to say this first verse.
Wow.
I strongly feel is a clear demonstration of why you should never date a witch. Should never date a witch, because if you date a witch, you'll have a very good 5 years after you break up. You're just enjoying yourself. And then you wake up one morning, you haven't even noticed. If you live, by the way.
If the witch decides that you live, right.
Yes.
I've never heard a verse that is more blatant about the fact that they're putting a curse on you.
Yes. You wake up, you haven't noticed, but you're loveless and your life is pointless. If you're still alive.
Can I tell you a curse ex-girlfriend story of my brother?
Please.
My brother was dating this girl. He brought her to my parents' house, and then they broke up at some point, right? But like a week's after this visit, they were staying in like the guest room at my parents' house. My mom went to go change the sheets or I don't remember what, right? And she found a bunch of beans underneath the mattress, and then she discovered beans in a bunch of weird spots in the room. And her theory is that this ex-girlfriend was putting a curse on my brother and or our entire family.
Have things gone downhill for you guys since?
Well, so then there was a period of time where my mom and then, you know, had a couple of like, you know, a broken wrist and small weird problems like in a row kind of thing.
This is the worst possible story for you to bring here because now I have so many questions. We have to do a whole other episode on this story.
And the thing is, they're not together anymore. So it's like, I had questions. Mm. They broke up right around the time the beans were discovered.
Sure.
It's like, we'll never know. But me and my mom would like to hold steady on the theory that the beans were a curse. I Google it.
Have you or your mom talked to your brother about the beans? Does he know about the beans?
My brother has laughed about it. He just doesn't buy it, but he's like, we don't even know know if it was her, but like it had
to
have been
her. Dry beans or wet beans?
They
like
were
out of a
dry
can.
Beans. Like okay. They weren't cooked. They weren't ready to go. You know, they weren't like chili and then under a mattress. They were a dry bean. I want to say they were like a pinto bean.
Oh, you don't see dry pintos too often. But
you
I guess I just want to get to like my punch list of like top two or three crucial questions on this. Are you aware of anything in her religion having to do with beans? Was she
This is where I don't want to say anything wrong, but like she's
a bean worshiper.
She is possibly a bean worshiper. She was Chinese, but like I don't know, right? There's like a billion people over there. There could be some bean elements. Mm-hmm. I want to say I'm saying all these things as an Iranian American Muslim who has an aunt who regularly reads my coffee grounds to tell me my future.
Yeah.
So
and
we
all have these things
in our ethnic backgrounds. I don't if there's beans in your background, I'm cool with it.
And
just
as a
so
Muslim
we're clear.
Living in American culture, I think you probably are living your whole life with people having all sorts of misconceptions about what comprises your religion. I'm saying that gives you the green light to have all sorts of conceptions about beans being in other people's
religions.
And just
being wrong about every one of them. Yes.
How do you feel about people saying Occam's razor? Is that in or out like Overton window?
Just using the term?
Using the term, Occam's razor.
Oh, it's been around longer, so
okay.
I feel like maybe it's
okay. Okay, so is the Occam's razor in this situation that, you know, she's Chinese American.
Okay.
From a family of immigrants.
Right.
She's going to spend time with an Iranian American family. Mm-hmm. Is she just stressed out about the food?
Oh,
she just stressed out of the food,
brought...
and she's like, "I'll
so
bring
she's
some
sneaking
beans.
A bean.
I'll just bring some beans in case I don't like the food. I'll cook myself
and
some
beans."
And
then there's a moment where she doesn't realize like someone's going to come in the room. She's like, "Ah, where do I put these?" And she shoves them under the mattress.
Maybe she had to sit on the suitcase to close it, and the beans just spilled out.
And the beans spilled out, and then somehow made their way in between the mattress and the box spring.
In the opening of your story, to me, it was the princess and the pea.
Oh,
that literally
is a story about
legumes.
Maybe she was testing my brother to see, right, because the princess and the pea, what was the deal?
To see if she's a real princess, you have to find out if she's extremely sensitive to any types of bumps.
She can feel the pee.
So
what is the smallest available bump
of
pee?
This was a test for my brother and what he can
sense. But then you said you discovered beans elsewhere. The mattress was just the first place.
So then my mom said that she also discovered beans. I can't believe it. Every time I say it, I feel weird. My mom has these like decorative little rolled up towelettes, you know, the bathroom.
Yeah, tea towels.
So they were yes, exactly. So they were in there as well.
Yeah. Would you be open to coming on and doing another episode that is just a true crime investigation of this?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do feel like as the beans are appearing in more and more places, the
story is expanding.
My Occam's razor
stops making sense.
And the Overton window of what it could be is really moving on me.
Yeah, the likelihood of it being a hex highly increases.
Right. Yeah, it really does, which is why I was like, you know what, Mom, you're kind of maybe right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think she definitely could have been thinking like, oh, this breakup is coming.
Look, when the breakup, I wish I could have sent her this song because it maybe would have helped her with the breakup.
Yes. Yeah. I think what I am loving
about
it. You would
throw your own brother under the bus like that?
Well, look, breakups for everyone are hard. It doesn't matter who's wrong or right. They just suck.
That is so empathetic of you.
Wow. Yeah, if your brother just happens to wake up 5 years later loveless, who cares? Who cares?
If my own brother lives that long.
How do you think he's dying in the scenario where he dies within that 5 years?
You know what? I feel like, you know, she seems like a really nice lady, Bjork, and I don't think she wants anyone to die. So to me, it's really just metaphor for like dead to like relevant, any kind of like in love, like you will not have.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe just, you know, she's sort of hedging, just like statistically speaking, it's possible you could die in the next 5 years.
Yeah. She loved to talk about statistics in her music.
For me, it's not as dark as like a suicide. It's more like, I mean, it is 1997. So for me, it's probably just that she's dating a lot of skateboarders and if you're a skateboarder, it's like you're doing, especially in the 90s, when the tricks are a little bit more daring than they are now. Now skateboarding is kind of like mumblecore skateboarding, but back then it's like you're going off the tall ramps and stuff. You're in the X Games.
No, that's a really excellent point. She was with skaters.
Andrew, as someone that probably was looking at this on Wikipedia, have you done the forensics on like who she dating in this time period? Who do we know this song is about?
Tony Hawk.
That's it. That's it.
I also Tony love Hawk. That you had one famous skater name in your pocket and you used it.
You can only spend that name once. One thing I love so far about this song is just how angry her voice is. I mean, it's definitely supported by the fact that she's like doing English as a second language, and so the like dark twists of her Icelandic accent are like adding a lot of color, but she just sounds angry. I want to play the next stanza here because it actually gets angrier.
I dare you to take me out.
I dare you.
I dare you to show me your powers. I'm so bored with cowards. Let's say they want and they make contender.
Oh, it's brutal.
I'm so bored of cowards who say they want and then they can't handle. Like, this is such a, this was just my dating life in your 20s. I feel like women are out there being like, let's be in a real relationship and dudes can't handle that. And but at first they're like, let's try. No, I can't do it. Like, there was so much non-committal behavior from everyone I dated in my 20s. And guys, I'm married now. It worked out for me. Don't worry. But just like this, I think this song was in heavy rotation for me, like in my dating life, I think, because I'm constantly, and maybe it was the dudes I was choosing, but I was constantly confronted with dudes that just were like super into it and then just like non-committal. And then it would just like, ugh.
Yes. I can even say as a member of that category, a dude, a guy who has been a dude, a man.
Yeah.
This song is labeling me. I don't think in my teens, certainly my 20s, did I understand what it meant to like get into a relationship and like share who you were? No, I thought like being in a relationship meant you're like going on dates, you're doing fun things. Yeah, that's part of it. But then you also have to share about yourself, talk about things that you feel like you're not supposed to be talking about. That's exactly what she's talking about here. It was hard for me to understand the first time I listened to the song because she pronounces it palms.
Palms.
Dare you to show me your palms, which is palms. And I think that's sort of like, oh, you know, if you're hiding something, you palm it. You're like a magician doing a trick and you just keep it hidden in your palm. So like to show me your palms means like, what are you working with?
Yeah.
Like show me your secrets, you know? But
there's also something pretty witchy about it, right? Because, you know, you have like you show me your palms. It's like, first of all, it's just like, it's a very like sensitive part of your body. Like there's probably more more sense there than anywhere else in your body. Like you have the whole palm reading thing. Like it's very
your lifeline, all that stuff.
And it's like almost like a medieval like coming to a peace meeting with the neighboring duke, right? Which is like, well, show me your open hands so that I know that
you're not carrying a sword.
You mean well, Sarah, or witch.
It's definitely something a witch would say right before they brand you with a red hot iron.
Yes, I too have seen the movie Beastmaster. Several times on TBS. I also think, I mean, we talked about the sounds, the sonic sounds as being kind of out of the same world, like the drum noises and the kind of keyboard synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
But I find them, even though they're kind of out of the same world, I find them to be really at opposition, that like super crunchy and this kind of sweet synth noise. And for me, that really paints an amazing palette of like, you listen to the keyboards and you're like, this is a love song. And then you listen to the drums and you're like, this is about the crushing desperation of the end of love.
Yeah, that backbeat is just like made out of white noise, basically. That synthesized drum sound is so clipped off and distorted that it sounds almost like static. And that sounds like rage, you know? You know that skittering white noise? I love these chords. You can't handle love. You just can't handle. I dare you to take me on. I dare you to show me your powers. What's so scary? Not a threat inside. What's so scary about this? What are you afraid of?
One thing that really struck me on this listen through, though, is right when she hits that kind of like the structure of this song is a little unclear to me. It's kind of like a verse up top and then like this really repetitive can't handle part.
Yeah.
But when she gets to you can't handle right there at the top, all the drums cut out. It's kind of this escalation of her accusing this person of being like a bad person who is emotionally unavailable.
Yes.
But the aggressive drum sound is actually out. It drops out. It's just the keyboard. And it makes her voice like all the more front and center and all the more like, j'accuse.
But and also, like, can you imagine if someone came to you with this song, like, as a relationship proposition? You know what I mean? Like, it would just be so, like, it would be so unnerving. And it is like that witch thing of like, oh, that's when you realize that you're dating a witch. And I hope that no one thinks that we're using witch as a gendered, like, you could be dating a male witch as well.
You deal with male witch.
Sure. So, for me, it's just about the occult magic.
Yeah.
Not
exactly.
About the genitals.
Not about the gender roles. But just that, like, it would be like, oh, I think I'm dating someone that's too much. Like, if someone were to come to me mid-relash with the proposition made in this song of, like, show me your palms, like, you can't handle, you know what I mean? And wait, you know, what's so scary? And it's like, oh, actually, like, you, no one has to say what's so scary if something is actually, in fact, not scary. So I can also see this, which is why it's so clearly to me a breakup song, because it's all these things that you wouldn't actually say to the person. Because
yes.
If you did, you'd come off like nuts.
Yes, she's written lyrics that sound like a prenup for a relationship. Like, I ask you to take me on. Like, can you handle me? Can you handle me?
Yeah.
I do love the idea of playing this on like a second or third date. And you're like, when you're like, okay, you had a fun first date. Like, oh, now you're talking about your ex on the second date.
Right.
And Bjork is just like, let me tell you about my ex. I actually wrote a song about it.
You know, I applaud any person that like hears this song on date three that, you know, and I guess it was Matthew Barney who probably heard this song on date three, right?
Yes, he's the next guy.
He's the next guy. And was like, I'm in. Like, let's do it. You know what I mean?
Let's have a baby.
Let's live at the Soho Grand together for an unspecified period of time.
There's the known genre. It's kind of like a subgenre of songs, the torch song. And the torch song is, you know, your lover has left, you've broken up, and you're singing about how much you miss them.
Mm-hmm. You're still carrying that torch.
This is like kind of a sub-genre of the torch song, where you're taking a torch to burn down the person's
yes.
shanty.
Yes, mm-hmm. No, that's what it is.
You're like,
yes,
we broke up.
Right.
Now, do you guys think there is a subtext? Do you think there's any lying in the song that Bjork kind of misses the guy, or no?
I mean, her pleading with him of like, I dare you to do this, I dare you to do that, is like, I mean, I think she's ready for the dare to be accepted.
Really?
You okay. know, and for his true intimate love to be unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's some sort of it's not tender. I don't think there's very much tenderness, you know.
I can confidently say no, this song is not tender.
Yeah, I think a lot of torch songs that are about like, I don't want you back. I think one of the things that makes them so great is there's like this real subtext that like, oh, but
I kinda
do want them back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is one that's gone all the way around and is just like, no, I wrote this song to drive you even further away.
The moment I realized I was an adult is when I had a breakup and, you know, it was kind of like mutual, whatever. We joked about like the backslide. Oh, there might be a backslide. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like opportunities for a backslide. You know, it's mostly just scheduling the backslide is really all that it is. And I didn't do it because I was like, what does that really serve? And that was, and I was like, oh, am I an adult?
You mean when you say backslide, you mean like you're breaking up with this person, but you're just gonna, it's just so easy to go back to that relationship.
Just, no, just like to have sex like a few more times after you break up.
Yes. Yeah. 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 That's what I'm thinking. You just go, it's, yeah, you're technically broken up, but it's just so convenient.
It's so convenient.
To call them up. You've already established some ground rules.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And you denied yourself the easy pleasures of a backslide.
And I think that there was, you know, in those Torch songs where you secretly do want to get back together, I had my first adult moment was realizing, like, oh, I have actually zero interest in getting back together. I think I care. There, a long time, because I confused lust and sex and all that stuff because I was too young. I would have written a Torch, I would have been attracted to a Torch song that had that, like, I kind of want you to get back together with me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think I reached adulthood when I didn't need that anymore.
Yeah. Dare I say that the cowards in this song may also be confusing love and lust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They claim they want something, and guys, they can't handle it. Just can't handle, you can't handle. Instead of like a drum fill, she's playing like the feedback from a guitar amp. You hear that clattering spring reverb? It's so cool.
And I mean, the flexibility of the emotion she's pulling through her voice is just astonishing. From these really like relaxed you can't handle to like these where you can like hear her like vocal cords starting to shred.
And her voice like cracks.
Yes.
It's awesome.
I'm pausing for that because that's like, to me, that's like the signature power of Bjork, is how she can crack her voice on purpose so precisely. Earlier she did it just sort of like walking up the scale, like you can't handle, and like breaking it on purpose.
Yeah.
But then also when she peaks on the high belting, instead of hitting a pure tone like a pop singer or whatever, can handle, she'll just on purpose fry her voice and like just squeeze out this emotion, just wringing it out with the tone of her voice, cracking her voice on purpose to make it cry.
Yes. It's so brilliant.
It's like a superpower that she has to make that sound.
Yeah, she's using her voice as an instrument beyond what most people do, and it's breathtaking. It's amazing.
I mean, I submit it to the court as evidence that she did a deal with the devil, but it's not conclusive. It's circumstantial evidence.
Well, because the other thing is, can I just say, this is a weird thing as a stand-up comedian, that, you know, nights when I have more than one set at the comedy clubs.
Sure.
By, you know, if I'm doing a 20-minute set and then I go do another 20-minute set, whatever. Like, my voice is really weak by the end of the second 20-minute set.
Yeah.
To the point where it's just like, I really need to do a bunch of hydrating and there may be a cough in the middle of this set.
Yeah.
And so for her to, like, be able to actually, I mean, who knows, I wasn't at the recording. Like, you know, in my heart, I'm at every one of her recordings. But, but you know, physically, I don't know what it takes to, like, keep your shit going, you know what I mean, through a song when you do that. Because just as a stand-up who's talking, like, I have a hard time.
Well, it's athletic. You know, like, she's using her instrument like an athlete.
Right, right.
Basically,
exactly.
It takes... you know, not to butter her up too much, but this is like a really physical performance. I will say, just as an aside, it can be more fatiguing to use your voice talking than to use it singing.
Really?
If you're used to controlling your voice while you're singing, then you can sing on a pitch, and that's like not modulating your voice very much, as opposed to when you're expressing yourself and talking and trying to do stand-up about, you know, I got the chicken on the airplane, and boy,
It's like you know my material so well.
You're actually modulating your voice like way up and down and frying your voice on purpose.
True.
And like, if you talk at a loud party, your voice is going to be way more tired than if you had.
Oh, that's,
and you're doing it all on less breath. So like your vocal cords are doing more work.
Okay. I didn't know. I honestly thought there was something wrong with me in particular, that my voice gets so tired.
Have you considered just singing your second set?
That's something... That is, I'm going to do it tonight, and I'll let you guys know.
Just on one note. Just one note. Whatever note is most comfortable for you.
Audiences will love that.
We're like ambassadors for just doing vocal coaching now, but I guess that's the spell that Bjork casts on you. Let me get back into this music here.
Okay, here come the strings. We've been waiting all song for them.
The strings are new.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Drums are out. Synth is out. Oh. It gives it a classical scale. I feel like I'm listening to an opera, except it's an opera I enjoy.
Yes. She also did like a breathy thing over those over the strings. That was interesting.
Yes, like the string section. She matched it by bringing out this new vocal quality.
Yes.
And, you know, if you start the song, if you start listening at the beginning of the song and you hear the first 20 seconds, what you don't think is this is going to a string quartet.
No, you don't. You don't. And with Bjork, you should. You should think of the thing that you wouldn't ever think.
Yeah,
and
you
then
thought
you may
it was
going
to go to a really distorted electric guitar. And you know what? Bjork played you.
Yeah.
That's why the totally. Other people we talk about are just musicians, are just songwriters, and Bjork is an artiste.
Yeah. Wow.
That's why she got a MoMA retrospective right there. Because you never know
totally.
If she's going to go to the string quartet. And right when you think she's going to go to the string quartet, she goes to the tuba solo.
That's the truth, my friend. I will say that's what I like about this section. The string quartet kept it fresh. It brought, I was like, wow, now I'm in a movie.
Mm.
My breakup is now a movie.
Mm.
It helped me imagine myself as a teenager laying on the rug in my bedroom, just letting the sound wash over me, because the song is, at this point, getting a little long for me. We have been wondering if the subject here can handle love or not for quite some time.
The whole song is kind of operatic or kind of cinematic in scope, both in its length and also just kind of like almost has some movements here.
That does make me think about, like, oh, you listen to, like, one of the big masses by the great classical, the greats, a Bach or Mozart Requiem or Mass or something like that. What do? They have, like, one Latin word that is then spun out by the choir over the course of, like, eight minutes. Magnificat, 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 you know, seven and a half minutes later. Magnificat, 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 cut, 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 cut. You know, they're still going, they're still going. You know, we have movements in this song that are just exploring. You can't handle love.
But can I just say, from the point of view of a breakup, that is like you go over the same thing in your head over and over again about what was the failure of this relationship? Like, how could this have happened? You know?
Yes.
In slightly different ways, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it kind of reflects the experience, right? That you're just going over and over. I had a breakup that was really weird because the dude, after years of us being together, and I wrote about this in my book, so it's I'm not breaking any stories here, he disappeared. Like, that's how he broke up with me. And
like in a witness protection type?
Like, he just, I was like, we were having, you know, he was actually having problems. And I said, listen, you should go see a therapist or something. And I'm going to go on tour. And when I come back, like, we can go to a therapist together. It'll be great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, that sounds great. And then he kept in touch with me throughout the tour. But then when I came home, he was gone and he didn't respond to my phone. And it was crazy because we'd been together for years. So it was a really weird way to break up with someone, to disappear on them, you know? And the only reason I knew that he wasn't dead is because his friends were like commenting on my Instagram, like everything was normal, you know?
But not him? That's not proof he's not dead.
Well, he was like one of these weird people that didn't have an internet presence.
Right. You must have had like the key to his apartment. You must have like gone to his apartment to see if he was dead.
So it's like I knew intuitively that this is how he was breaking up. I just somehow knew.
Yeah, you sniffed it out.
Yeah.
So you did not go to his apartment.
I actually one day just walked by his apartment. Like, what did I think? I was just going to run into him. I don't know what I thought. And again, in a way of like knowing that this relationship was no good for me, walked by, just walked right on by. And wow. So I felt again an adult moment. Ooh. So no, much of my adult growth happened in breakups, actually.
You know, that's a good example though of a person who is like in the midst of a breakup and you're just stewing on it, and that's very plausible. Like, you don't have to explain it at all, that feeling of I'm just gonna walk by and just maybe we might happen to bump into each other.
Sounds
insane when you say it out loud, but like, we've all been there. I've done that. Like, I'll just go to the area in which I'm, that's an area they might be,
it's a free country
in.
Totally.
But it's also a good, I think this is supporting your artistic claim that the song is making a soundscape of this mental state of stewing.
Right.
A counterpoint to you thinking the song is too long, Evan. One thing I will say.
Oh, no.
If you, during a breakup, when you're really diving deep, in my experience, you sometimes end up with, I don't know if this happened to you, Nagin, a song on repeat. Was this song on repeat for you? Full repeat?
This song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the shorter the song is, that means the more you're going to hear it.
Yeah.
If you have the song on repeat and it's a 2-minute long song, you're listening to that song 30 times an hour. If this, you know, if you find a 6-minute song that speaks perfectly to your breakup, you're only having to listen to it 10 times.
What's the dude's name that you, I went to Andrew's college dorm room and he had on repeat this specific sitar raga?
Ah, yes.
What's the guy's name?
Well, that wasn't a breakup song, but Ken Zuckerman.
Ken Zuckerman.
If anyone has a sitar raga as a breakup song, I'm so curious about that person.
Yeah. That wasn't a breakup song. That was more of a bonding.
It was a break-in song with your roommate.
It's a break-in song with my roommate. We've both come to love this Sarod player named Ken Zuckerman, and we listened to his album nonstop, and it's great. I'll send it to you. I listen to it now with my wife, and my wife is crazy for it.
Yeah, and every time,
very good album.
I ask you, do you want to listen to that raga one time? You say,
Utah, give me two.
Cut by my own quip.
Wow,
That's
the most forced I've ever used that.
It almost worked.
Seriously, though, when it gets to the end of the song, just play the first 5 seconds so we can be in Nagin's head when she has this in repeat in circa. Like, I'm imagining this is like a 2008 breakup.
Yeah,
Nagin.
That stewing
this was,
mindset.
Yeah,
that
this was like a 2011
mindset.
Breakup.
Okay. So this at that point, this song has already aged for 15 years, like
a
fine wine.
Yeah, that's why I don't associate it really as a 90s song.
Yeah, what matters is when did it enter your life?
Yeah, I would say it was a late aughties, early teens.
I love this
major
part.
Song
we've
for
we've
me.
Left the lyric long behind here, and we're just in a soundscape.
Finishing with the drums. Oh,
strings fade out.
Right back into it.
Right back into it.
I love it.
Seamless.
Yeah.
How long is the song, Evan? What are we clocking in at?
4:29, my friend.
Okay, so you're listening to that about, what, 13 times an hour?
The funny thing is with some, and I don't know if you guys have this with certain artists or whatever, but like even during the breakups, I would try not to over listen to this song or to her songs in general because I didn't want to get like bored with them. You know, because I love her so much, like I don't want to do that to her. So like I have to be disciplined about it.
Yeah, you feel like you're friends with her and you want to use forbearance with lest she be overused. Bjork must be protected.
Oh, I'm embarrassed. It's funny for listeners who have never heard of me. They're just going to be like, she's really weird about Bjork and she's got a ton of breakups, like more than the average person. What's going on? I'm coming off really odd in
no
this
one
episode.
Will think, well, yeah, you are coming off odd, but in a lovable way. And everyone that comes on this show, it's like we only get to know them through this one window of one single song.
Weird.
So everybody has that same impression of everybody.
And frankly, I find it endearing that you picked such a personal entryway.
Oh, thank you.
That's very nice.
Yeah, it was just what came to mind when I got the question.
I will say I started this episode a little stressed about punching this song up. Mm-hmm. And I'm finishing the episode also stressed about it. You, Evan and I still have to take this song, which is great.
We learned a lot about it.
I feel like I could write a very good paper about it, tying it to the works of Shakespeare, specifically Macbeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in your art history class.
In my art history class, but I'm not sure how Evan and I are going to make the song even better. We're going to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
But if you have any last minute tips for us, I'm all ears.
We know a lot about how it connects to you personally, and we heard some things that you love about it. Is there anything you would change?
I guess it would be interesting if the tempo of the beat varied, the one that we get so used to. Yeah. Like if that had a difference. At some point, do songs do that or whatever? I don't know. Anyways,
well, they might escalate the drum pattern or something like that. Yeah, they clearly like came up with this really dissonant, staticky drum pattern that sounds really unique, really cool. Sounds aggressive. It fits the character of the song, but they just like hit play and loop.
Exactly.
They just hit the loop button.
So I'm like, what if you guys did something with that? Mm-hmm. Was one of my thoughts.
What if we changed the loop?
What if we changed the loop?
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I think we got some good ideas. We got some good jumping off points. We learned a lot. Let's go see what we can do with it. We'll see you back here after the break.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
Welcome back to the podcast, and welcome back to Nagin Farsad. It's good to have you back.
Oh, Nagin? So glad to be here.
We are back in with a punched up version of 5 years. So what we're going to do is just explain to you a little bit about the choices that we made.
Okay.
When we analyzed the song, we talked about, you know, the visceral nature of this breakup song, but we also talked about Björk's character and how mysterious she is and how mystical she seems to us mere mortals, to me at least. And so
I think to everyone. I don't think this is an opinion that just we hold. This is
okay, thank you. That's generous. It's not subjective.
Yes, I think it's an objective fact that everyone in the world sees Björk as being almost like a otherworldly demigod.
Other, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she lives on another dimension.
An alien among us.
If you went like far enough up her family tree, like her great, 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 great grandfather would be Thor.
Yeah, yes, but Thor from Mars.
Yes, she doesn't have the same powers as him. She's different powers, but there's still powers.
Sure, art powers. So that was one crucial improvement we felt like we could make. Björk, the alien witch, is here really doing almost an impersonation of a human who's been through a breakup. A very good one.
Really good.
Because she's an expert artist. A lot of pain being expressed here. But what if the song was just honest and from the perspective of a witch?
Okay.
So that's what we've done.
And there was, if I recall, some history of witchcraft in your family.
With
breakups.
Yeah.
It was your brother.
My brother, yeah.
Your brother had dated a witch. Is that correct?
Just some sort of superstitious person.
So we tried to bring that in. We also accepted your challenge. I'm not sure if it was rude or courteous of you to give us a specific instruction to put in a tempo change. Although I also don't know if it is the way you were really expecting. Lastly, we had one ace up our sleeve, and that is my sister-in-law, who is also my personal hero, was at my birthday party a couple weeks ago. I already know that
she's your sister-in-law.
She's my sister-in-law.
Because she happens to be my wife.
She's Evan's wife. She's a fantastic singer. I know that because she's been my bandmate for 13 years.
Uh-huh.
But I did not know she was a fan of Björk until she sang a Björk song unprompted.
Oh, I love that.
At karaoke at my birthday party.
And she didn't know we were working on this.
So that was the ace up our sleeve. My sister-in-law, Evan's wife, Sarah Gregory, just crushing a Björk impression. And maybe an impression of someone else.
Well, we'll see. The last thing I'll say is that in the middle of the song, because it's a witch, you know, there's a little bit of okay, that's it. Okay, that's all I'm going to say.
Before you press play, I just want you guys to know that I'm so nervous.
Have you ever had someone write a song for you, Nikki?
No, I'm so nervous for me. I'm so nervous for you guys. And I'm so nervous for Björk, like all in one ball of nerves. Okay.
Have something to lose here.
That's been some feedback we've gotten from people is like, we expect people to laugh at this, but we've had one or two people who responded with like, I've never had someone write a song about me before. And it was just like the dumbest thing ever, but like, it's still true.
It's still true. Oh my gosh. It's very thrilling.
Let's ride that thrill right into some playback.
I heard that.
See, already it's a lot spookier.
Oh my God.
double, double toil and trouble? Well, I've got plenty. A charm of powerful trouble, but you won't notice till after 5 years. If you live that long, your mom will still ask all about me. I curse you. I've been saving my best frogs. I curse you to silent moments with your mom when she looks up from nowhere, says she loved me like a daughter.
What could be worse?
Your mom will like me more. Everyone will like me more. Not just more than your new significant other. More than you yourself.
The worst breakup curse.
I curse you to a really judgy mom. It's so scary. Complice souls every night. And now I'm casting my vilest incantation. Your mom will love me like Carly Rae Jepsen. Hey, why'd you break up with that quirky girl? She reminded me of Zooey Deschanel. Since then you put on weight. Oh, my poor baby. Are you trying to hurt me? Just call her maybe. And it's not even limited to your mom. It's the UPS guy and your dog. It's everyone. They miss me. They think I light up the road.
That's it. Oh, much God. Spookier.
Was that a crow?
Yeah.
I'm just floored. I just don't even. I'm so. First of all, it is the full verbal expression of the curse.
Yes.
That was real life being played by this ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
I mean, condemning him to silent moments with his mom. I mean, I can't.
That's also, the best outcome if you get broken up with.
Yes.
You want that person to suffer.
Yes, you want that person to suffer. Very, it's a very particular form of suffering, by the way.
Which, yeah.
I also love that it also extends to various like utilitarian people in his life. Yeah. Like the UPS guy.
Even the UPS guy misses the ex-girlfriend.
Right.
So much that they're all going to do Friendsgiving together without you.
Without him.
I mean, imagine that. That's a legendary Friendsgiving. The dog, the UPS guy, your own mom, and your ex-girlfriend.
Right. Which, interestingly, though, I think this also speaks to her, like, not understanding the nature of their relationship, because my brother wouldn't care about where the UPS guy has Friendsgiving. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it maybe also speaks to like how she was misguided in her own feelings.
So she's a little
unhinged. And her understanding of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, the specificity of this curse, you know, in the original Bjork, it's like, maybe you'll be alive in 5 years, but I'm not sure you're gonna be. But here it's like, what's worse?
No,
or your mom in 30 years still being like,
what happened to that girl?
I lives could have been different for you.
Yeah, completely. I also love that in multiple occasions, the syllables didn't match the music.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever that term is in musicality. Too many syllables for the number of areas.
Yes. you have the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Classic problem.
Loved that because it's sideways Bjork, right? Like Bjork does stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah, that was one feature of the original where it feels like the meter is always moving.
The meter's
a little bit. She's entering in a different place.
Yeah, so that was like a hardcore homage in a way that is clear that you guys don't know her meter, right? Like you guys have a meter of your own.
And it's extremely witchy to not obey the human laws about where to put notes.
Also, I mean, but could anyone have guessed the Carly Rae Jepsen interlude? No one could have guessed that. And that's why you're both masters in the field, because that came out of nowhere.
And trust us, we didn't know about that when we were halfway through writing this, and then it just...
And it happened.
Right? Honestly, it makes me wonder if someone's put a curse on me.
Yeah!
You know, how much just sprang forth... from my head, like Athena. It's like that.
The weird
thing, shouldn't have been in there.
That should not have been in there. And the weird thing about that Carly Rae Jepsen song, which is, I think, one of the best songs of all time.
Yes, and that's why all moms love it.
Yeah. Is that I also almost always think of Obama when I hear that song. Because he did, remember when everyone was doing those videos where they were like singing along? And he did one of those videos.
Wow. It was a law that everyone had to do a Call Me Maybe lip sync.
I mean,
at some
world
point.
Leaders had to do it. Nobel Prize winners had to do it. It was like everyone had to do one. And I just famously remember Obama. Look that up, by the way. It's one of those delightful moments of his presidency.
My absolute favorite entry into that genre, because it was so sad. I mean, we could look up the exact dates, but early in the summer.
Yeah.
Call Me Maybe came out.
Yeah.
You have 2 months of lip syncs.
Yeah.
August
so
hits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gangnam Style.
Oh.
Sweeps Call Me Maybe away.
Yeah,
all of
the
sudden,
year.
Nothing but Gangnam Style dances, you know, etc. Maybe 6 weeks pass, and in the middle of September, the Pittsburgh Steelers
put out
a Call Me Maybe lip sync. And it was just so sad to me
to watch
all them smiling, just be like, guys, like this had to be a Gangnam Style thing. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, it should have been Gangnam Style.
They missed. Yeah. It was locked up in the red tape and bureaucracy.
Just a real missed opportunity to not have your offensive and defensive linemen doing the Gangnam Style dance.
Yeah,
because they have the agility to do it, but it would have blown people away.
I hope the Pittsburgh Steelers are listening to this podcast right now.
Maybe they followed up.
Too late.
Maybe they dropped a Gangnam Style dance in like 2015, 2016.
Yeah. Well, let's get around to that. We really dropped the ball on that.
Guys, wonderful job.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to hear that from you.
It was such a pleasure. It was a real challenge because we're fans of Bjork, but this song, it was one that, you know, wasn't at the top of our Bjork list of things that people could throw at us.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about this being a little bit lower down on the list.
Less straightforward than, you know, your Tom Petty, your Bad Company.
Oh,
we
even
talked about switching your walk-in song, which we'll get to in a couple minutes with this, but we said, no, you want to do the Bjork, we're doing the Bjork. One thing I will flag that I kind of saw this as being totally impossible until, first of all, I was like, music-wise, what if we just put in a bunch of crows?
Sure.
That helped a lot. You know, just
which,
anything.
That was hilarious. I mean, that, I think, that should be in the original, crows.
Yeah, anything that the Macbeth witches mention. Any animal, we'll just bring in those sound effects, kind of do it as more of a movie mix almost.
I actually put in almost 100 newts into the track, but they're silent.
They're very quiet, yeah. So... But the other thing we realized once we really got off and running was this is an odd song compared to a lot of the other songs we've done, in that there's basically no rhyme scheme. Like the only rhyming that happens in the song
is
repetition.
Yeah.
You know, when she gets into the B parts and she's like repeating a line a lot, it's a quote, I guess it's a rhyme, but it's really just a repetition. So we could kind of just, we realized like, oh, we can say like whatever shit we want. And we don't have to worry about like, oh, does Carly Rae Jepsen rhyme with something? Like, you just don't have to worry about it the way we did a couple weeks back when you're doing, you know, Kenny Rogers the Gambler that has this very, you know, structured Nashville rhyme scheme.
Right. No, I love that I gave you guys the most difficult song you've had in your season.
It's giving us a great season arc.
But also, we have a friend in common, it turns out, who also reported to me in the interim that you guys were stressed out about this song. So I know that this was, that I really, really gave it to you guys.
You were getting secret intel?
I was getting secret intel that you guys were stressed out about this song.
Until we realized that witches don't rhyme.
Right. And then you're like, oh, we could just let that all go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's a witch hack.
Okay, so we've teased it enough. Nagin, thanks again so much for the song. I have put it on just for pleasure since we finished the Punch Up. It's a great song.
I'm so glad.
And we'll be back in one moment with your walk-in song, which hopefully, honestly, one day we'll be punching up. Well, they said it couldn't be done, but we did it.
Yeah, we said it couldn't be done.
You're right. We said it couldn't be done, but we took a Bjork song and we made it even better.
You were really stressed out about it.
Yeah.
And then you really did it up.
I dare you to punch up this song.
Yeah.
She screamed at us.
All I had to do, honestly, what really broke the case open for me, I was stuck for a long time. And then one night, just accidentally looked at my palms. It's like,
that was a secret.
I had also just done a bunch of LSD. That's just a joke. I don't do LSD. So, Nagin, thank you so much for coming on Punch Up the Jam.
Oh, my gosh.
So happy to have you
here. What a pleasure this has been.
It's so fun.
It's beyond a pleasure. It's an honor. Is there a day of the week that everyone should look out for Fake the Nation in their subfeed?
What's the day of the week? Fake the Nation drops every Thursday. We follow news and politics and culture, and it is just like three topics being kvetched about by me and a rotating panel, array of panelists like, Margaret Cho and Samantha Bee and Neil deGrasse Tyson and just really amazing and hilarious people American culture. So,
celebrities.
I highly recommend it, though I am biased.
So, we wrap up the show every week, Nagin, with a little segment we like to call
Walk-In Music.
What is your walk-in music?
And we gave you a heads up. Uh-huh. You've already had some time to think about it,
yeah.
But I think we're going to warm you up with some of our walk-in music.
It's only fair. It's only fair that we walk in before
when
our guests.
When Evan and I introduced this segment, I had a very strong understanding, and I would even go as far to say we had a handshake agreement that we were only going to do our walk-in musics once, and then every week our guest would share their walk-in music.
Like, there's only one walk-in music for you forever.
Yeah, you only have one walk-in song.
But now do you have multiple walk-ins?
But unfortunately, Evan makes me do this every week. Just as he has a great disdain for the $5 on Venmo bit, I have a great disdain that I have to come up with a new walk-in song every week.
It's pretty stressful.
It's because I'm really having to stretch it out. The scenarios are having to get more and more complicated because you can't just keep saying like, well, we're going to do another party.
We're not even that far into our tenure on this pod. You know, when we're 1,000 eps deep, it's going to be getting pretty weird on here. But I stand by my choice. The reason we make you do it every week is because I'm right.
Okay, so I'll cue you when it's time to start my walk-in song, Evan.
Mm-hmm,
but in my scenario, I'm at the doctor's office.
Okay.
And I'm saying, doctor, I'm depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been having I've been having a really, really awful time with my life. I just don't know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And the doctor says, hey, you know, tomorrow's Thursday. There's this podcast. It's called Punch Up the Jam.
Uh-huh.
And what you should do is subscribe to it, download it. And it's just absolute dog shit. Podcast. It sucks. The two fucking guys on it are morons. They don't know anything about music. They're not funny at all. Okay, hit the cue. And I say, but doctor, I'm one of the hosts of Punch Up the Jam. And he just goes, yeah, I know. And then I walk out of the doctor's office and I'm walking down the street just sobbing tears. The tears are streaming down my face. As I walk back to the office to record the next episode of Punch Up the Jam.
Wow.
You could also be like coming into the studio to record an episode of Prairie Home Companion. You know what I mean? With this
yes,
song.
The pure, wholesome Americana-ness of this clip.
Well, I mean, you already know how I feel about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Nagin. So don't get me started on Prairie Home Companion.
Andrew, just tell us what we're listening to here.
This is Chet Atkins, the virtuosic guitar player, playing the... I think you could call this a standard, The Entertainer.
Yeah.
Who wrote The Entertainer, Evan? Is it a Joplin? Is this a Joplin jam?
This is a Joplin joint, a Scott Joplin joint.
Joplin joint.
A JJ.
I know it must be a Scott Joplin song because me and Evan's piano teacher in like rural Virginia was obsessed with Scott Joplin. And I heard her play this song so many times that it's like, if Susie Goody Koontz was rocking The Entertainer, it had to be a Joplin tune.
That's awesome. Is there something specific about your doctor being so critical of you that, like...
Only that you had sought him for advice, that you're feeling malaise.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I once had a gynecologist.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Who literally, while I'm up in stirrups, tell me, like, oh, just so you know, I know your comedy.
Oh, no.
And I was like, cool, well... I'm in the most vulnerable position that a person could be in. So, oh, and she's like, no, and I think it's great. You know what I mean? But she like put a real pause in there. So it was like unclear if she, because it almost sounded like she was going to go, I know your comedy and I have some notes. You know what I mean? Yeah. While I'm getting a pap smear.
Yeah, I know your comedy and maybe that's not what makes white people laugh.
Yeah.
But I, taking it from her position, I guess she wants to talk to any of her patients about anything ever, and they're always in that position.
Right. No, exactly. Her only conversations are when people are at their most utterly vulnerable.
But surely she knows that, right? She can't just bring up I love your work.
But she doesn't know the power of her own pauses. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The pregnant, shall I say, pauses.
And I was pregnant, in fact.
There has to be a part of that appointment where you get off the table, right? She's not.
Yeah.
She's not leaving the room while
you're
still
on the
table.
There's like plenty of time
right?
when you're not in stirrups.
At the end of the appointment, to be
she
like,
been like,
"Hey,
oh, I know you're. Yeah,
we've done all the things you were here to do.
Yeah.
By the way, love your comedy.
So it could have been strategic, just to make you know, because I'm captive right there.
It was a power move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She played it off like it wasn't.
Yeah.
Did she? And I think this would be unusual for an OBGYN. I've never been to an OBGYN myself.
Oh, you should give it a try.
But did she? While she was doing the examination, say, oh, while you're up there, I'd also like to see your palms. And if so, was that more
she
or less
was like,
vulnerable than the
other stuff?
I think
you can't handle it, but would you like to show me your palms?
If she had said that, you would have freaked.
I would have lost my mind.
Run out of the OBGYN office in your gown.
Or I would have just given her all my money. I don't know. Wow. Something in either direction.
Right. You open the door. Just a wall of beans. Just pouring into the room. What's your walk-in music this week, Evan?
Okay, my walk-in music, I'll just tell you the name of the song. I'm not springing a surprise on you. This is a band called Kansei Seder Sexy, and the name of the song is Music Is My Hot, Hot Sex. My scenario is, this is apropos of our discussion, we talked a lot about breakups and intimacy and therapy. So that's why I thought of this playing as I introduce myself to a brand new therapist. And they say, tell me about yourself. First of all, they know that I rock when they hear this.
Yeah.
You hear that attitude.
Therapist is like, so I'm hearing your work is important to you. It's music.
Music is my boyfriend.
Yes.
Music is my girlfriend.
Great granddaughter.
My favorite waitress.
Wow.
Music is everything to me. That's my walk-in music. Nagin, what did you bring
Tell us a little. Do you want to start with the song? Do you want to start with the scenario?
I feel like everybody knows the song. It's U2's Beautiful Day.
Wow.
And in my scenario, it's a walk into the world scenario, because you know that feeling you have when you go and pitch something? Like, and for me, it's, let's say it's TV shows or movies or whatever. Please let me do this. You go to some sort of institutional authority.
Yeah, you're putting yourself on the line.
And you're basically asking, you know, you're asking to raise money. You're asking to whatever it is. You need something from other people. It requires you to perform for them so that they can make a decision. And then you leave the office and you're like, that went really well. And this, and then you go through this, you know, the turnstile. What?
Yes, it's always a turnstile. You're going back out the security.
Back out of the security of the building.
And you burst out onto Columbus Circle.
You burst out onto, you know, I was on Park Avenue, but you can be in Columbus Circle.
Park Avenue it is.
And what? Of course this is the song that you hear because you just were so triumphant. And it could be raining, but it's still a beautiful day because you just really challenged yourself and you did it. You fucking did it.
Wow.
I'm supremely feeling this song in a way I never have before. Thanks to this entertainment industry centric tale.
But I want to say it's anytime you ever like go for something, and it could be like you finished the marathon, you like went for it, you did it, you tried a thing that was tough for you to do.
Yeah, and you didn't win the marathon, you just completed it.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, you know, one thing that's like, you can't even describe U2 as cheesy, because that's what they're going for is ultimate sincerity. And their emotions are forward. This is what they're trying to do, and they're great at it.
Yes, so good.
Right. I mean, you have to judge. You have to judge the product on the intent.
Yeah.
And if U2 is trying to make something that wasn't the cheesiest song ever, perhaps you could throw a stone at this song. But they knew what they were doing, and they did a great job. I do think that this is kind of the perfect tempo for strutting down Park Avenue. I can just imagine your shoulders moving forwards and backwards. It's kind of like walking a little faster than you usually would because you're just pumped full of energy.
And there's a lot of sidewalk. It's a wide boulevard, right? So there's a lot of sidewalk space for you to just really take up some space.
Yeah.
You and the buildings are just like huge and imposing, but grand, just really grand. Everything's grand.
One thing about the sound of U2, like the Edge's guitar always has this like signature really long delay on it that make it sound really echoey. That evokes this sense of like a huge space, a huge landscape.
Right.
And so when I hear this song, any U2 song, but especially this one, I picture myself with my jacket unzipped, dangling from my outstretched arms, and just billowing in the wind as I pirouette around a desert.
Oh, back to Dune. Always back to Dune.
I'm really glad you brought this one in because it is a massive hit. Like, it's not like...
Everybody knows
the obligation here is not to bring in, you know, some obscure indie band that nobody knows. But to hear it in this way that you're bursting out of a corporate office just having nailed a pitch is like, oh, it's really working for me.
It is the perfect walk-in song, or at least a perfect walk-in song. And Nagin, you have been the perfect guest.
Wow.
Thank you so much for being here. And I think if we play our cards right, I think we could now have this podcast classified as art instead of a podcast from here on out. So please follow Nagin on Twitter and Instagram. Her name, Nagin Farsad, NEGINFARSAD. I'm Andrew Rose Gregory, A. Rose Gregory on Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm Evan. You can follow me at GetSomeEvan.
And if you liked the punch, you can go get it on our Patreon page, patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. All the punches are there.
Wow.
You know, when you've decided, I liked that Bjork song, but
I'd really like to listen to it on the privacy of my own phone.
Evan and Andrews was better.
We'll see.
And we'll catch you next week on the next episode of Dune. Let's
punch Brought it. To you by Witchy B.
That was a HeadGum Original.